The committee will come to order. And Representative Root is on her way down, I know. President Hayden, will you move approval of the minutes from January 22nd?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we move the minutes for January 27th.
All right. Any discussion about the minutes? All those in favor adopting, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. We also just have an announcement in people's packets that we're reconvening or continuing the work of the East Metro PSC Oversight Group, so that and the members from last time, which are basically the members that live in that area, members of the legislature that live in that area, are members of the working group, and that's really just a notice for people. All right, we'll wait for Representative Rood to arrive. So, whenever you're ready, Maria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Are you ready? Is that okay?
Please proceed. Yes.
Okay. I don't know how you beat me. I thought we left the room at the same time. I want to again thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to hear this, for having a hearing on this bill today. And I would like to move that House File number 293 be approved and referred to the Health Finance Committee.
To the Finance Committee,
right?
And they'll send it to
Health
Division.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm just going to make some brief comments, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. David Ahrens from the American Cancer Society. Members, as we move to seek to balance the budget, we're going to have many discussions. And it's going to be a difficult session, as we are all anticipating. But I think it's important for us to continue to discuss policies that continue to move us forward on health care reform and ultimately lower health care costs.
As
members of the health care committee.
Representative Root,
yeah.
Excuse me. Could you just pull your mic a little bit closer? Thank you.
Sorry about that. I feel like I'm yelling now. Okay. As members of the health care committee, it's also important that we continue to seek ways to address health disparities, and that is something that we know that we can and should be doing better on. It's also important that we are cognizant of federal funding that may be available, and this bill does position Minnesota to be ready to receive federal funds from the CDC as Congress appropriates the funding. With cancer, the key after prevention is always early detection. And when colon cancer is detected early, the 5-year survival rate is over 90%. When it has had the opportunity to advance, the survival rate drops down to 10%. Basically, I'm going to give you the real bird's eye view of this bill. What this bill does is it makes grants to two healthcare entities to provide colon cancer screening for high-risk groups. The groups that are identified are groups that are either uninsured or underinsured, and they are high risk for colon cancer. The grants will be made available through the Office of Management and Budget and given directly to these entities. The bill would pay for screening for a limited number of people, and the screening, when people have been identified as having colon cancer, the bill also directs that medical assistance will cover the treatment costs. There is also an evaluation piece to this bill. It requires that the University of Minnesota School of Public Health evaluate this program and make recommendations back to this committee next year. And with that, that's very brief. It's an overview, and I'm going to turn it over, Madam Chair, to Mr. David Ahrens.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rue. Welcome to committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Ahrens, the Director of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society in Minnesota. American Cancer Society is Minnesota's largest voluntary health organization devoted to the elimination of cancer, with tens of thousands of members representing cancer survivors, patients, caregivers, and those going through cancer treatment. We're honored to be here to speak in support of Representative Rood's colorectal cancer screening bill, Minnesota's Colorectal Cancer Prevention Act. We believe this is a very important first step towards addressing a growing health problem in Minnesota, but one that largely has been not talked about in the healthcare debates of the last few years, and that is colorectal cancer. The reason we're so much in support of this is because, as she said, colorectal cancer is very preventable if people are screened. And in fact, this bill begins to lead us down a path towards saving lives and saving costs. A couple of things that are very particular about this bill, and I hope you'll support it, is one, as Representative Rood says, is it lines us, helps line us up for federal dollars. Congress right now is considering, through the appropriations process and through the regular bill process, creating, through the Centers for Disease Control, 3-to-1 federal matching dollars for state-level programs designed to screen and underinsured people for colorectal cancer screening. We already have a very successful program in the state that provides screening for women for breast and cervical cancer that gets 3-to-1 federal matching dollars. We'd like to see the same thing for colorectal cancer screening. State programs that create a small program, even a tiny one like this, line up and receive special consideration according to federal legislation. That's why we are coming to you in a arguably a terrible fiscal crisis to ask for us to do something right now so that we can save lives, save costs, and leverage federal dollars right away. The other important point about this bill is that it's lean. This bill does not build the size of government anyway. It's money would go directly to two hospital systems located in areas where there are concentrations of high-risk Minnesotans for colon cancer and uninsured, in northwestern Minnesota through Merit Care and through Hennepin County Medical Center in urban Minneapolis. This sets us up to do the most good for people that really need it right away. And this bill stands a great chance of success. Now, what kind of cost savings might this bill get? Well, we know that a colonoscopy, for example, and that's only one of many different types of colon cancer screenings, could cost $1,000, even $2,000, can save anywhere between $16,000 to $200,000 in cancer treatment costs. If you're screening someone who has no insurance or is underinsured, then you are likely looking, if they get a chronic disease like colon cancer at a late stage, they may fall into the pool for uncompensated care and medical assistance. So by providing the screening dollars, you're potentially avoiding costs to the state to uncompensated care and medical assistance, potentially. Now, another facet of this program is that we're not asking Minnesota to shoulder the entire financial load. American Cancer Society is providing in-kind services to make this project a success, to the tune of $25,000 of in-kind services. The partners in this program, Merit Care including, are putting up in-kind services as well. And you'll also hear from the University of Minnesota School of Public Health about the evaluation component to make sure these dollars are spent wisely and they lead to a report back to this body, this committee, and this legislature on how we as a state can move forward with colorectal cancer screening. I ask for your support for this tiny but very important step forward today in solving a very preventable form of cancer, colon cancer, and it's one of those forms of cancer that we have not done enough about. I'm going to stop there. I know we have other testifiers on this bill, but I look forward to any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Are there any questions from members at this point? Okay, then we'll go on to the next testifier. Thank you. I have Mary Erickson on the list here. And if you would please identify yourself for the record and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
Yes, my name is Mary Erickson, and I'm here today to share my experience with the doctors and nurses of our community who are stepping up to help people like me who need important cancer screening services but can't afford them. I'm 60 years old. I'm a mother of two. I'm a grandmother of seven. I have a little great-grandson. I grew up in Minnesota, and I've lived here all my life. I live in Little Canada right now. I've worked all my life and at most times have had health care coverage. I'm currently laid off, and for the previous 6 years, even though I had been working full-time, my employer did not offer health insurance. I've been without health insurance for 7 years, and I live every day hoping that nothing terrible happens. I get my day-to-day health care from a local clinic that offers on a sliding pay scale. I looked into Minnesota Care, but my savings makes me ineligible. My mother died of breast cancer, so I always made breast cancer screening a priority. I get mammograms and checkups through the SAGE Breast Cancer Screening Program at Regions. I've used SAGE for mammograms for more than 10 years, and I'm so grateful for this service. It gives me peace of mind, and I know if anything is detected, I'll catch it early when it can be treated and cured. For 10 years, I've known that I should get screened for colon cancer. Everybody should when they turn 50, and it's been on my to-do list. Nagging in my mind was the fact that my father had polyps removed over the years and needs regular colonoscopies for follow-up. I knew that I was long overdue for a test, but with no insurance, it was just too expensive. What really motivated me was the experience of a dear friend who came down with colon cancer at age 56. I've seen how devastating and expensive the disease can be. She had to have part of her colon removed and underwent chemotherapy. She didn't get screened at 50, and maybe if she had, they could have caught it earlier. While searching for an affordable way to get screened, I learned from the American Cancer Society about a free colon cancer screening day at Regions. I was fortunate. I qualified and received a free colonoscopy in May of last year. During the procedure, they did find and remove three polyps, which means I may have prevented cancer down the road. I won't need another procedure for 5 years, and I have peace of mind knowing that I don't have undetected colon cancer. I'm so grateful to the physicians, the nurses, and other volunteers who made it possible for me to get screened. Unfortunately, I know there are a lot of people out there in my situation, and they may not be as lucky as I was. I just wish that colon cancer screening was available to everyone who needs it. I hope you will support Representative Rood's bill so that people like me will be able to get screened and know whether or not they have colon cancer before it's too late. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions for members? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much,
thank you.
Ms. Erickson. And now we have Warren Larson. Welcome to the committee. If you would just please introduce yourself for the tape and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
All right, thank you. My name is Warren Larson. I'm the Community Development and Public Policy Coordinator for AmeriCare Health Systems in Bemidji, Minnesota. I also serve on the Midwest Division of the American Cancer Society, and I'm also an active member of the Minnesota Cancer Alliance. Thank you, Chair Stephen and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify. AmeriCare is a large nonprofit health system that serves communities in both North Dakota and Minnesota. We have 430 physicians, over 600 volunteers, and 7,188 employees. We serve 19 communities in northwest Minnesota, and we own one regional hospital in Thief River Falls. Just to give you an idea of the area we serve, it stretches as far north as East Grand Forks, and then down south in central Minnesota to Morris, Minnesota. And then from east to west, we have a clinic in Cass Lake, as well as Moorhead, and then kind of all the communities in between. And so we have a very big imprint on communities in northwestern Minnesota. AmeriCare believes strongly in preventative care and providing health care services to individuals who are unable to afford the cost of preventative screenings. AmeriCare is strongly in support of proactive intervention in colon cancer as it lowers the cost of health care and ultimately saves lives. Our presence in Bemidji and Manoman creates a unique opportunity to serve a population that has a higher than average incidence of colon cancer. We also serve a large population of American Indians and rural and underinsured Minnesotans as a result of our proximity to three reservations. MeriCare is very excited about the possibility of this demonstration project. We look forward to partnering and also in preventing colon cancer by doing screenings for high-risk people that might not otherwise be able to get life-saving cancer screenings. We do have the ability and the capacity to carry out a project of this size. And we look forward to working in partnership with the Department of Health, the University of Minnesota, the Hennepin County Medical Center, the American Cancer Society, to carry out the screenings and develop recommendations to the legislature for how we as a state can move forward to provide screening to populations at risk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for members at this point? Okay, thank you very much. I don't see any questions, so we will call on Kathy R. Church. Welcome to the committee. Please
thank
introduce
you.
Yourself and go ahead.
Thank you to you, to Chairman Houston and the rest of the members of the committee for hearing me today. My name is Tim Church. I'm a full professor in environmental health sciences within the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. I've spent most of my career studying colorectal cancer screening. I've worked with the National Cancer Institute. I've done research under their auspices and with their funding. I've worked with the American Cancer Society both at the local and at the national level and done research under their funding and auspices. I've worked with colleagues at the University of Minnesota, including Jack Mandel, John Bond, Victor Gilbertson, and Mark Yazel, in researching all aspects of colorectal cancer screening. We conducted the very first study that demonstrated that screening for colorectal cancer using fecal occult blood testing can reduce not only mortality from colorectal cancer, but also can eliminate some of the incidence of colorectal cancer, thereby preventing some people from ever getting the disease that otherwise would get it. Other studies confirmed our findings, and now colorectal cancer screening is recommended for everyone over the age of 50. This bill is an important step in allowing us to evaluate providing life and health-saving screening to those who do not currently have access. In the evaluation of these results, we can help to develop stronger recommendations for the legislature on how to expand this access to screening for all Minnesotans facing health disparities. Ultimately, screening everyone can save not only the health care costs involved, but also create a healthier and longer-lived population, which is good for all of us. In addition to the study I mentioned before, I'm directing large trials in Minnesota on colorectal cancer screening using flexible sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy, and genetic testing. These are part of national studies that are involving over 250,000 people. The studies in Minnesota are involving almost 100,000 Minnesotans who are spending their time on these studies, and they obviously feel this is an important topic. Furthermore, a study my colleague Mark Yazel and I did in Wright County, using volunteers there, demonstrated that mailing fecal occult blood tests to people who don't otherwise live close to clinics can increase the use of colorectal cancer screening by 25%, which represents half of the underserved people in those areas. I feel that my extensive experience in evaluating colorectal cancer screening makes me ideal for the evaluation process of the outcomes of this demonstration project represented in this bill. Finally, one note regarding the potential findings. This is a very small demonstration project, and so the economic impact of it will be small, but the potential impact, if we can bring this kind of access to all Minnesotans who need it, can be quite large. In the immediate future, we would predict that there would be less than 3 people who would be found with colorectal cancer. So the actual costs, increased costs of care to the public would be fairly small, but the benefits could be enormous. Finally, I want to say that although my employer, the University of Minnesota, is in support of this bill, the views I've expressed here are strictly my own as a researcher. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Questions for members? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Church, it sounds like you're the right person to research this for sure. In your research, have you seen more effective ways of doing outreach to particularly the underserved populations that this project's going to target in terms of reaching out to, you know, uninsured minority populations, that sort of thing? Would this help test those kind of outreach mechanisms?
Well, there, as Mr. Ahrens mentioned, and you're probably aware, there are many ways of screening for colorectal cancer. The most prominent way is through colonoscopy, and this is the primary way that this bill can reach other people, but it's not the only way. As you point out, one can use other methods of outreach, as we used in Wright County. Mail can be used as one way of contacting people who may not otherwise be in the loop as far as colorectal cancer screening. There's been a great deal of research about methods for bringing people who are unscreened into screening, and I think this bill allows us to look at a way to do that that may provide a reasonable method of access and a cost-effective way to bring these people in.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think Mr. Ahrens would like to add to that, if that's okay.
Go ahead. There are a couple more questions in addition, but certainly please state your name for the record again so the tape knows.
David Ahrens with the Cancer Society. Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, one of the great things about this idea, we're hoping, is that because it's a partnership, AmeriCare, Hennepin County Medical Center are partnering with the Cancer Society to provide that outreach to make sure people get in for the screening in ways that are culturally competent. We've seen one of the problems in the past is getting the right people in the door to go get screening, but one of the things we bring, not bringing more cost to this bill, but because the Cancer Society is going to partner, is bringing private sector dollars and services to help do the outreach. For example, we have staff that work in northwestern rural Minnesota. They're going to work with AmeriCare to help educate and make sure the right people, the people that are targeted to this program, are coming in, getting screened, removing polyps, saving lives. And so outreach is a very important topic. It's a very good question, and it's something we're bringing a lot of focus and evidence base to.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Church, you seem to be the one to ask, what is the difference between, as far as cost effectiveness, fecal blood testing and the colonoscopy? Obviously, there's a great difference in cost for these, and I'm just curious as to why we don't do the lesser one.
That's an excellent question. There are some countries that are only, at this point, doing fecal blood testing. But there is a great deal of research that's been done on the relative cost effectiveness of these different screening methods. And the consensus so far is that colonoscopy is the most cost effective, but not by a great margin. And that seems anti-intuitive at first because the cost of a fecal occult blood kit is so small, something on the order of $10. Whereas a colonoscopy can cost upwards of $2,000 in some cases, and depending on what the procedures are done. But the reason things tend to balance out a little bit more is once you take all costs into account, including reductions in mortality, reductions in treatment costs, and reduction in incidence, is that colonoscopy is believed to be so much more effective at removing polyps and at identifying cancers at a much higher probability than fecal occult blood testing does. Now, I have to, as a researcher, I have to say there's a lot of uncertainty in these analyses because all of the data that have been produced don't always address the question that you're asking directly, and so there's a lot of assumptions that go into the models that evaluate the cost effectiveness. But that's the current conventional wisdom right now. Some of the research I'm doing right now is to look at some of those questions regarding the assumptions in the cost-effectiveness models. And so that may change. But I don't think there's a great deal of money in the long run to be saved by just focusing on one type of screening. I think it's important that we use all types of screening that would increase the number of people who undergo screening and can therefore benefit from it.
Okay, we have a couple more questions here, and then we do have another bill today. So Representative Kelly has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really, it goes along with Representative Lane's question specifically. So for this project, we are, for the screening purposes, it will be colonoscopy?
Dr. Church.
The primary way we screen these days is using colonoscopy, but I think that's been because we've predominantly focused on people who are already coming to clinics and already have a doctor that they regularly see. Part of the question here is, are there better, more cost-effective ways of getting people who are underserved into the clinic and screening? It's important to recognize that even if somebody gets a fecal occult blood test, if that test is positive, they still have to undergo colonoscopy. But obviously not as many people will have to undergo colonoscopy. So I think that'll be one of the objects of our attention in the evaluation is how do you get people in and sort of what are the constraints on being able to do that.
Okay, we have a follow-up, please.
Yes, and then you said for this project, the limited number. What are we anticipating for numbers that might come through this project?
We've been thinking in order of 200 to 400 people altogether. And that depends on, obviously, on our success as well as other factors.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, one more question. Representative Bunn. Okay. Mm-hmm. Representative Bunn is going to pass. Any other questions for members? Okay. Then if there are no other questions, I think that's it for testifiers. So Representative Rood renews her motion that House File 293 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, the next bill is House File 177. Okay, if those who are leaving would please be very quiet because we're going to continue here in view of the time. Representative Thiessen, would you like to move your bill?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I would move that House File 177 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Thiessen moves that House File 177 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Okay, thank you. Representative Thiessen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This issue has to do with radiation oncology facilities. It's been an issue that's been before the legislature for several years, and it has a long history of extended hearings and extended testimony, including doctors and patients and a variety of folks. And over the years, the legislature has made the decision on repeated occasions that limiting the expansion of these types of machines is the right public policy for us to be pursuing. Last year, the committee passed an unlimited moratorium that was sent to the House floor. As a result of negotiations, as the bill was moving through the process, we extended the moratorium 2 years, till 2011. And what this bill would be to extend that out 3 more years to 2014. And there, so actually what we're asking for this year is less than what we passed from this committee last year. So what we're trying to do this year is less than we passed out of this committee last year. And the reason we chose 2014 for the bill is that we have a study, and it's a study that we had extensive testimony about last year, and really the only study that's looked at this issue extensively that shows that we have excess capacity in Minnesota for people that need access to these machines at least through 2015, so beyond the ending date of this moratorium. And in fact, in the last year, the machines that we currently have are actually operating at a lower capacity rate than they did in 2007. So that is that would suggest that the capacity may be in existence for an even longer period of time. And that comparison of 07 to 08 is in members' packets. And it's not true for all facilities, but in general, if you look, most facilities are at a lower capacity than they were in 07. You know, technology is one of the factors driving our healthcare costs. It's a significant capital expense that has to be paid for. And if you're getting fewer treatments because there's more capacity in the market, one of the results of that, or one response, if in fact we have a true market-based system, would be to raise prices, because that's how you can then pay off those capital costs. And that's kind of the simple calculation. So I actually do see, and I think the legislature, when it's passed these bills in the past, has recognized that this is in large part about controlling costs. The other significant point is that there is a map that has been circulated in the past showing that anybody essentially in the metro area has access within 15 minutes of one of these facilities. And a different model is pursued in other parts of the state. Down in Representative Hamilton's district, where several hospitals collaborated to put one of these in, recognizing the cost savings that would result from that. I know that Representative Huntley has to leave at 4, and he has an amendment, so I'm going to stop here, but maybe it would be appropriate. I don't know if you want to take some additional testimony first, if you want to go to that, to his amendment, or if someone else can offer it, or what have you, but just to respect that.
Hey, Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Thiessen. What I think I'll do is just give my feelings about this bill.
Okay.
Or thoughts and feelings, too, actually. And then I think someone else can offer the amendment. This is a very expensive procedure that we're talking about. The equipment is also very expensive. But it's a procedure that is never overutilized. There's no indication that anybody that gets this treatment shouldn't have got that treatment. So there's not a problem with overutilizing it, and that's important to remember. What this is basically a fight between two groups of radiation oncologists. One group is based in hospitals where they lease space. They own their own machines, and the hospital basically gets a lease payment. The other group, MOPA, has a different model. They are basically a medical home for people with cancer, and they have the oncologist and the radiation oncologist working together as a team, as opposed to the other model where the radiation oncologists are not part of the oncology clinic. MOPA has a different model. Some of their facilities are in hospitals and jointly done with the hospital. Some are in suburban areas. And some of us remember Representative Ron Abrams talking about his wife who had cancer and needed to go for periodic treatments, and that he pointed out that a 20-minute trip in a car for her was a really big deal. MOPA has a model that I said where they have a number of these machines around the city. They jointly work, as I said, with the oncologist and the radiation oncologist. And there's another group of radiation oncologists that aren't involved in this fight. And they're at the University of Minnesota and Fairview. You have in your packets a letter from the Minnesota Hospital Association saying that we don't need to extend this moratorium at this time. You have a letter from the American Cancer Society opposed to this bill. And you have a letter from the Minnesota Medical Association also opposed to this bill. So I would urge you to vote no. And obviously I'm not going to be here for the vote. But I think this is an important issue. We've been haggling over this for it seems like at least 10 years. And again, it's a fight between two good groups of radiation oncologists. Both of them do a good job, but one of them wants to keep the others out of the business. So I urge you to vote no.
Okay, thank you, Representative Huntley. I know Representative Gottwald has a question. We do have some testifiers. Did your question pertain to this comment, or can you hold it? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Thiessen, are you ready to have your first testifier?
I don't think that any of them are mine.
Oh, I'm sorry. They're not yours. Okay, let's make that really clear from the outset. Okay, and we have Thomas Glenn. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Dr. Tom Flynn. I practice with and am currently president of the practice for Minnesota Oncology. Madam Chair and members, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. We have been through a number of versions of this moratorium, as has been pointed out, and last year the moratorium was extended to 2013, as Chairman Thiessen has indicated, with an agreement among the House, Senate, and Governor. There really has not been, in our view, a valid independent study of radiation capacity that's been provided and one that addresses the future needs over the next several years. The Oncology Solutions study that was presented last year, we believe, had significant flaws, and many others testified to that fact as well. There's serious concern about the methodology that was used there. The number of 35 treatments per day was landed upon for reasons that we don't fully understand. There was one reference made to the fact that this was based on a assessment by Varian, which is a manufacturer of radiation therapy equipment. However, the committee was given a letter last year from Varian's general counsel indicating that they did not validate that number and did not support that number. There are other sources, such as the American College of Radiation Oncology, who also has disagreed with this number and would place it more in the 27 or 28 patient per day range. I think the bottom line is it's very difficult to come up with a precise number because of the current technology and advances in treatments that have been made. Treatment times vary considerably depending upon the particular treatment approach the individual patient would need. So these capacity numbers that were passed out today, we would disagree with because they are based purely on this 35 patients per day or 35 treatments per day number. And our perspective is that this should be about the patients and about providing access to the best possible care. We think that more data is needed to know what is best for the patients. We need an independent study by a credible outside entity before a decision is made on this provision. And there really is no reason to make a decision right now. This moratorium is in place for another 2 years. There's still certainly another session to address this next year if there's adequate data that can be obtained at that point or prior to that point. We truly believe that careful consideration with the appropriate information in hand should be the approach that is taken. As Representative Huntley pointed out, other entities have also indicated their desire to have more information before making a decision on this matter. The American Cancer Society, Minnesota Medical Association, the Minnesota Hospital Association, and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I also have with me today my colleague, Dr. Mark Palmer, who is a radiation oncologist and who knows firsthand about providing radiation treatment to real-life patients every day. Dr. Palmer practices in our facility, which is a joint venture partnership with United Hospital in downtown St. Paul.
All right, thank you, Dr. Flynn. Are there questions at this point? And I've still got Representative Gottwald on the list. Okay. All right, Dr. Palmer, and please welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Palmer. Dr. Flynn asked me to come and talk to you today because I am a practicing radiation oncologist, and he wanted me to give my point of view on this. I'm currently working at a facility in St. Paul. It's a facility that's a joint venture with United between Minnesota Oncology and United Hospital. I wanted to talk about this 35 patient per day premise that this oncology solution study is based on. They're saying that, you know, the best case scenario, you should be able to treat 35 patients per day on a machine. I want to say that I think that's a bit of a best case scenario. It's not a realistic number. I currently just yesterday looked to see what numbers we're treating at our facility, and our one machine that's capacity is treating 27. I called my colleagues at that.
Excuse me, Dr. Palmer.
Yes.
That noise is usually means that somebody's cell phone is activating it. So if everyone would please shut off your cell phones, that will help our taping system. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh. I called my colleagues up at the Maplewood Cancer Center. They do some more complicated treatments than us. They're actually treating 12 hours a day in order to treat their patients. They treat 40 on one machine and 30 on the other, which works out to about 26 per 8-hour period in the one machine and about 20 per 8-hour period on the other machine. The difference between the two is based on the fact that on the one machine they're doing a lot of image guidance radiation, which is kind of the thing that's up and coming, and I think there'll be a lot more in the future. Radiation has changed a lot in the last 10 years, and it's going to continue to change. And as it changes, the treatments become more precise, more accurate, and more likely to cure the patient, less likely to cause side effects. So I think it's going to be a good thing for patient care in the future. But along with that, usually it comes with more prolonged treatment times. So I would say that, you know, the number that ACRO states in its guidelines of 28 patients per day is a much more realistic number. And I don't think that's a static number. I think that'll probably change in the future. It'll probably get longer, or fewer patients, longer treatment times, as the treatments get more complicated and more complex. So it's not only it's an issue that I think is going to affect patient care. If you look at the numbers in this oncology solution study and you put in 28 as opposed to 35, you find out that the capacity is pretty close, actually, to the current number of patients being treated. And if you look at the projections in that study, it's going to increase the number of patients treated, and it will soon be that the numbers treated will be more than the capacity. I think this is going to interfere with quality of care. Patients will have to wait longer. They'll have to be rushed through treatments, which will cause more inaccuracy and more of an impersonal treatment. Patients will feel like their cattle being herded through a treatment machine. They won't be able to get the times they want. It'll be much more convenient. And I think patients may have to travel longer distances in order to get their treatments as opposed to bringing the treatment machines and facilities to them. So I think it's an issue of patient care, and I think patient care will suffer if this bill is extended 2013. So in summary, I think the 36 patients per day is an inaccurate number to base the you know, future of radiation on in the state of Minnesota. I think it's going to interfere with patient care, and I don't see a reason why we should extend the moratorium without better data to justify it.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Palmer. Any questions for members at this point? Okay, thank you very much. Next testifier is Twyla Braid.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president of Citizens Council on Healthcare. And we have testified on this bill before, although I think not in the House, but in the Senate. I have a handout here for whomever would take that. Our organization is supportive of both hospitals and specialty centers, but most importantly, we're supportive of competition between them to improve patient-centered care and decrease costs. And there are at least three good reasons to give radiation therapy facilities and other freestanding specialty centers with radiology services the opportunity and the right to thrive independently in Minnesota. The handout that I gave you, which I realized maybe Representative Tyson didn't get, shows you the money that has been spent by hospitals, for instance, over the last few years while specialty radiology services have not been allowed to expand. And so you see, for instance, that St. John's Hospital was adding an $81 million expansion that includes a new cancer center. Regions spending $179 million on their expansion, which includes a 10-story patient tower. And the rest I'll just let you take a look at there. And our organization is not opposed to such facility improvement or expansion, but feel like this prohibition against construction by the hospital's competitors seems quite unjust to doctors, specialty centers, and the patients who want to use them. The second point is just the cost of care. When you think of how costs could be reduced by specialty centers with radiology services, consider the impact of MinuteClinic. According to a 2006 Health Partners study, the total costs at MinuteClinic were 25% less than care provided at doctor's offices or urgent care clinics. Patients choose MinuteClinic because of cost and convenience, something that causes patients to migrate to specialty centers as well. Hospitals are already competing with MinuteClinic, and there's no telling what could happen to cost if hospitals were required to compete for the preference and price points of patients in a whole range of services. And the last thing is the patient themselves. And I encourage you just to think of ease and disease. First, ease. The elderly are here, and the baby boomers are coming. Have you ever walked into one of these huge mega hospitals recently? You have to drive into a ramp, walk through the ramp, down the elevator, into the hotel-sized lobby, up to the elevator, down a maze of corridors, etc. It's like going to a university when you're sick or injured or disabled and being forced to walk all the way across the campus. They actually call it a campus. At the specialty centers, there's usually a parking lot, a readily accessible door, and the receptionist may even know your name. This is patient care. Second, consider disease. There are lots of germs in the hospitals, and we've all been hearing about them recently. And if you're a sick person, it's best for you not to actually end up there. A specialty center is not immune to infectious disease, but without an ER and with focused care, the exposure of patients to outside disease is less. An important added protection for patients during cancer therapy or for any patient getting an invasive procedure. In conclusion, I just want to say that patients really want to have change, and they really want opportunities. And as you consider this debate, realize that the hospital-centered healthcare system may need to change for the 21st century. Granting hospitals protected status through a moratorium effectively gives them a corner on the market of care, a monopoly of sorts. And while we are very pleased that the hospital is not in support of this bill this year, they have been for the last 5 years or so. So we would like to move patients where they want to go in the 21st century and allow them to make the choices that work for them in an environment that they're comfortable with. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Braze. Any questions at this point? Representative Gottwald, can we go to you now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm trying to think a little outside of the box of this because I heard Representative Huntley's comments, members, about this conflict between two oncology, radiation oncology providers, and that there are others involved. And there are some calls here, I'm looking specifically right now at the American Cancer Society memo to us about a study, and we don't want to study things to death. Studies are often delay tactics, but have we ever thought about putting some sort of standard in place, some sort of trigger, whether it's a certificate of need,
something that takes this out of a political realm, that our committee should have to be constantly deciding on an extension of moratorium seems a little counterproductive. It may depend on the makeup of the committee, but it certainly wouldn't depend necessarily on a unbiased look at what's best for cancer care, what makes the most sense from a cost-effective perspective. Are there geographic distance issues that need to be taken into consideration? If we could somehow develop something that would allow us to not have to constantly revisit this. I intend to vote against this bill. I don't think we need to extend the moratorium currently. It's in place for at least another year, as I understand. We've got time to do this. But in the meantime, shouldn't we be looking at a way to take this out of the constant, let's extend it 2 years, let's extend it 3 years, let's extend it, and look at something empirical to say, here are the conditions under which we need additional facilities, and here are the conditions under which additional facilities would be harmful to the healthcare system and to patient care and to the cost of healthcare.
Yeah, Representative Gottwald, I don't know if that question was directed to Representative Teese, and do you want him to answer it?
Why don't I do that? I haven't brought this up with Paul before, but thank you.
Do you want to take a stab at that?
Well, I think that there's a larger issue, Madam Chair and Representative Gottwald, that you're raising, and I think that this document, perhaps about the hospital expansion, this doesn't go directly to radiation oncology, is raising about how we handle capacity issues and the medical arms race, et cetera. And I think your question is going to some of that, and we probably should spend some more time on that. I guess I would honestly prefer, and this committee preferred last year, just to extend this indefinitely so we don't come back and keep revisiting this. And because of some negotiations that occurred, I think that 2015 or 2014, is a reasonable number because it's within the length of the only credible study that we have. And I would note that Oncology Solutions is a nationally recognized organization that has provided research and support not just for this study, but also has been used by MOPA, for instance, for some of their issues and their parent company. So this is not a biased company doing the study. This is a very credible national organization. But to your point, I think that there might be other things to look at. I don't know if a certificate of need has worked well in the past, and maybe at some point we do have to take a look at some of those options. But I think for the purposes of this bill, this is the right answer right now.
Okay, we have a couple more questions, and then we do want to get to a vote, so we're going to try to move quickly if we can. Representative Hayden is next, then Broad, and then Kelly also wants to make a comment. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a couple of clarifications that I wanted. I know that Representative Huntley, fortunately, is not here, talked about the geographic nature of it and that, a 20-minute ride may, mean something to someone who's really, really ill. But it's my understanding that we have a standalone facility in Maplewood that was built right across the street from a hospital that also was delivering the same services. Is that right, Representative
Thiessen?
A while ago. I think that's part of what started this whole discussion several years ago.
Right. And then, Madam Chair, I guess my second question, and I'm losing it now, but I think it gets to what Representative Gottwald said, is that it becomes a very subjective nature in terms of when we have these conversations, especially for a new person like me to figure out if it's a geographic issue, is it about a payer mix issue, is it just about the market, is there capacity issues, is the number, is the formula or the methodology correct? So it would seem to me as that if we have something a little more systematic that we understood that there's some threshold or trigger, that would kind of help, especially a person like me, be able to make a decision, because I want to be able to have high level of patient care, but at the same time I'm very sensitive to making sure that we don't create more capacity and then some people are being treated and some people aren't. So.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hayden. We have Broad and then Kelly, and if you can make it brief, please, because we do want to get to a vote. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make it very quick. Representative Thiessen, I had heard in past years something about a testimony in the Senate suggesting that actually 50 patients a day was doable, and I'm wondering, do you have recollection of that, and do you have information related to that? I just don't recall it specifically.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Broaden. I was going to respond to that at the end. The MOPA folks, Dr. Flynn, testified in the Senate that they were in, this is in 19, 1998. No, this is more recently than 1998. But a few years ago, they testified that they were treating approximately 50 patients per day. And to that point, you know, I think the 35 treatments per day, that is based, again, by this objective company, a consulting firm, on the materials that the manufacturer of these machines provide and their understanding of the business. And they're very involved in this specific business in terms of watching it. I think it's also interesting that this is based on an 8-to-5 model. And you just heard testimony today that there are models now that are running 12 hours a day, which is probably actually more convenient for many patients. And that's another issue that goes to capacity. The last thing I'd say about capacity is just to return people to the fact that we actually are having more excess capacity this year than we had last year. And so I think with regard, and the last comment just on that, there was a comment that capacity is close to the number treated today if we use the 27 number. But you can see from the document in front of you that we're not at capacity right now, that we're not using the machines at capacity. So that kind of belies the fact that 27 is perhaps the right number. But I don't want to go on too much further than that because in the interest of time.
Okay, thank you.
But that's exactly right, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Keeson. Okay, Representative Kelly has a question, then we're going to move to a vote if we can. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern has to do, I guess, more with Representative Keeson mentioned the medical arms race. I think that's a very good point. As fast as technology is moving today, especially in the medical world, my concern would be about choice for the individual and for the patient themselves. If one entity can move quicker in that area and all of a sudden comes up with a better tool or a better equipment to do these therapies, I would be concerned that we'd be limiting their ability to provide that to their patients themselves. So I would suggest that as quickly as this is moving, it might be good to leave it at a two-year, since we've got the two-year moratorium already here, and then see how technology advances, how the numbers that we can treat advance. So that would be my concern.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kelly. Any closing thoughts, Representative Keeson, before we vote?
Yeah, Matt, just to that point, there have been, even within the facilities that currently exist, new technology has come in. So this won't stop innovation. It just stops additional machines, you know, so there have been swaps out of machines.
All right, thank you. Well, Representative Keeson renews his motion that House File 177 be recommended to pass. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The ayes have it, and the motion prevails.
Thank you.
And we are adjourned.